The U.S. Senate goes down to the wire on its tax bill. Indiana House Democrats elect a new leader. That plus the Indiana First PAC and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending December 1st, 2017.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, the U.S. Senate pushed forward its version of the tax bill as Republican leaders worked the vote and made changes up to the last minute.
The Senate tax bill lowers the corporate rate from 35% down to around 20%, while doubling the standard deduction for taxpayers while eliminating several popular deductions. It also potentially increases the deficit by more than $1 trillion, which led some GOP staffers to ask for a sort of trigger that would cut spending or increase taxes in the future if economic growth doesn't meet expectations. Republican Todd Young is a staunch supporter of the bill, arguing it's simpler, fairer, and allows people to keep more of what they earn. But Democrat Joe Donnelly says the bill doesn't meet his criteria, that it helps stop outsourcing, focus on the middle class, and keep the debt down.
Is the Senate bill the kind of tax reform Hoosiers are looking for? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Joey Fox, John Schwanis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Katzenberger. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Now, as we tape this, the Senate is still working through some votes, but the Senate tax bill is expected to pass. So, I asked this about the House bill a couple weeks ago. I'll ask it now about the Senate version. Will Hoosiers be satisfied with what's in this bill?
Yes. They sent a Republican Congress and a Republican president to Washington in part to get tax reform done. It's the first time we've done tax reform in over 30 years. I wasn't alive the last time we did tax reform in this country. This is the right piece. I think conference committee is going to be really a fun period for the members of Congress. That said, at the end of the day, I think Joe Donnelly should think very, very carefully about how he votes on this bill. It's going to matter in next year.
Do you think a no vote from Joe Donnelly will hurt him next fall?
I don't think so at all. In fact, I think that Todd Young is betraying Hoosiers. He said he was a deficit hawk. He said he wasn't going to allow the deficit to explode. The best projections of this trickle down from the rich to the poor tax bill that the Republicans are proposing leaves a $1 trillion hole. $1 trillion. And now they're talking about ways to fix it in the future, which will either raise taxes or cut Medicare, or cut Social Security, or cut Medicaid. This is not what Hoosiers are looking for. This is a giveaway to the rich, poorly disguised as tax reform. We don't even know what the impact on Donald Trump is, because, of course, he's the only president in modern history not to ever release his tax returns. But there are billions of millionaires out there, not billions of millionaires, but there are a lot of millionaires out there that are going to be happy with this bill. But for the average Hoosier, they get screwed.
I'm just glad that, for nothing else, we've gotten Democrats to talk about the deficit, nothing else.
Well, you certainly aren't.
John Katzenberger, will Joe Donnelly, if he votes no on this, as some now expect him to, will he regret that vote next fall?
I don't think so. I think that when you look at the bill, and many of the things that Ann just described are shown by third-party or relatively independent groups like the Congressional Budget Organization. And so the analysis is that it will create a deficit over 10 years of $1 trillion, that most of the benefit will accrue to those in the much higher tax brackets, although it does make some middle class and some lower class changes. But I don't think it politically will hurt him, despite the repeated drumbeat that we've heard from Republicans over and over and over. And I think that's a reflection of their own anxiety over the bill, actually, because they don't know what's in this bill. Nobody knows what's in this bill because it has not gone through any of the rational processes that we've always had for these kinds of things. In 1986, when they did tax reform, they didn't do it in a month. They took months to do that.
With hearings.
Joey Fox mentioned the conference committee on this. Yeah. It still has to go to something that the House and Senate can agree on. To a point, then, the details are changing, like I said. It seems like down to the last minute. And to that end, How similar will what we see out of the Senate now be related to what the final product looked like in a month or so?
Well, I've almost given up trying to predict because, as you suggested, this has been everywhere. As the House bill was, now the Senate bill changes just, in fact, today when there were concerns by some of the deficit hawks who said, you know, this trillion dollar figure is problematic. But it's so much of this is going to be in the timing in terms of repercussions. Some of these, the downsides may not be apparent immediately. But if, again, as has been said, if are a family or a taxpayer who has lots of medical bills, if you have a lot of college student loan debt, if you
are a teacher doing out-of-pocket expenses.
There are lots of ways.
There's probably political cover for Joe Donnelly and the likes of other Democrats in similar situations. If you look at AARP and other organizations, and he could say, look, this is a group, a constituency that I value,
that told me to vote no on this bill.
Well, they didn't tell him, but there's cover.
Yeah, they did.
Oh, yeah, they did. The Indiana House Democratic Caucus elected a new leader this week.
It was a close decision, 15-14, as House Democrats chose Caruthersville Representative Terry Gooden to lead the caucus. Former leader Scott Pelath announced last week he would step down to spend more time with his wife and son. That prompted the caucus vote this week to elect a new minority leader. Gooden, a school superintendent, has served in the House since 2000. He's considered one of the more socially conservative members of the Democratic caucus.
Ann Delaney, is Terry Gooden progressive enough to lead the House Democratic caucus?
Well, he's very good on public education issues. He's got some great ideas on public education issues, and he realizes the importance of ending gerrymandering, which is a huge issue for the entire caucus, in fact, for a lot of the population of the state of Indiana. Having said that, he's going to have to probably moderate some of his positions to be more in line with where the caucus is, particularly on social issues. I expect that he'll do that. Otherwise, he's going to have a lot of friction. But unlike the Republicans, we tolerate different views within our caucus. Okay, we don't demand party orthodoxy in line with the Tea Party.
We're a different caucus.
I'm talking about all of your caucuses, as a matter of fact. You have lockstep on most issues that you think are important, particularly guns and social issues.
Are you a little surprised to see, speaking of guns and social issues, Terry Gooden votes on those more often with the Republican caucus than he does with the majority of the Democratic caucus. Were you a little surprised to see Terry Gooden?
You know, I don't pretend to understand the internal workings of the Democratic caucus
in
the House, so I'm not sure I'm qualified to answer that question. I think I got to work with Representative Gooden when I was still at the state health department during the HIV outbreak in Southeast Indiana and Austin. He was great to work with. I'm sure he'll be great to work with in the House as well.
Are you surprised? Is Terry Gooden the right choice for the House Democratic caucus, especially in the current climate?
Well, probably. And I'm guessing that you're right. I mean, all of Ann's comments about some of his positions being out of sync with whatever the mainstream is in that caucus in terms of being more conservative. I'm sure that those questions came up during the closed door meeting. Well, I guess you have good sources, than mine. I'm sure that it was a concern, and I'm sure there will be some attempt made, if not to placate those individuals. I think that rather than the strategy here is to focus on other issues where there is agreement, such as public school, a fortification of traditional public schools, and gerrymandering, because there aren't those kinds of disagreements there.
No. So. One House Democratic member said to me last week before this vote took place that worst-case scenario sort of thing, it's really only for a year. After next year's elections, they can always regroup and decide if they need to go a different direction. Is Terry Gooden a caretaker?
Well, I suppose that'll depend on what happens over the course of this year. Clearly, the caucus thought enough of him and wanted him to be their leader right now. And I don't think it's a trial period, but I think if he shows the leadership that the caucus is looking for, then I don't think it's a caretaker position. I don't think that's fair to Representative Gooden or to the caucus to characterize it as anything like that. But I will say that the last time that the Democrats had a ruling majority in the House, it had a very broad coalition. Much of that majority was made up of Democrats from southern Indiana who very much are like Representative Gooden in their belief on the Second Amendment and on abortion. And what you had is attention that was managed within that caucus. Not all the time, not perfectly, but they had enough to do that. His challenge and the rest of the Democrats is to find a way to build a coalition again and to get back those seats a little bit at a time so they can become more relevant.
Well, and this is a political show, right? And we can't overlook, too, that yes, he has a policy role to play in management of the caucus, but he's got to win elections. Too, yeah. And got to be able, and that's, I think that's the real test.
Yeah,
you know, this session will be very interesting to see how we get through. Does he pick up seats, you know, enough to start really making that caucus, you know, matter more?
Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is Representative Harry Gooden the right choice to lead the House Democratic Caucus? A, yes, or B, no. From the week before last, will the General Assembly approve Sunday alcohol sales and lift cold beer sales restrictions in 2018? 21% said yes on Sunday sales, no on cold beer. Just 5% said yes on cold beer and no on Sunday sales. 68% say yes, both will happen. Just 6% say we won't see anything like that. And then last week's question, a redux of one we did earlier this year. Given all the controversy surrounding Donald Trump, will Mike Pence become president before the end of 2017? I'd be interested to see if this poll were taken again after today, what those results would be. But just 6% say yes, 94% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, a grassroots Indiana political action group whose leader appears to have ties to white nationalists is backing controversial Alabama Senate candidate Roy Moore. Caleb Schumacher is behind a group called Indiana First, which formed earlier this month. It says it will raise money and phone bank for Alabama GOP Senate candidate Roy Moore, who's accused of sexual harassment by several women, including some when they were as young as 14. Schumacher appears to be previously associated with a white nationalist group, National Youth Front, and that alleged association led the campaign of Indiana Senate candidate Mike Braun to cut ties with Schumacher in October. Schumacher's group, Indiana First, has said they'll also focus on Indiana races, including the GOP primaries, to succeed Congressman Todd Rokita and Luke Messer. John Schwanis, are there Indiana campaigns that would want Indiana First backing right now?
Would you administer truth serum first, or would this just be a I think the answer is it depends on the boundaries of the jurisdiction or the size of the district being sought. If you're running for U.S. Senate, no, you don't want anything to do with that. If you're running even for a U.S. House seat, no. I assume that there are some small offices, very limited in geographic scope, where there might, I don't think anybody's going to embrace, you know, racist views, but...
But they're racist in the closet? Is that what you're saying?
But, well, it's happened.
Which pockets of Indiana are those?
I hope there aren't, but there may be out there.
Okay.
On the off chance that there are racist pockets of Indiana,
here's what I'm getting at. I'm trying to be as candid as possible. For instance, the gentleman here has suggested in the case of Roy Moore, he's going to take maybe 30 volunteers, have them work phone banks, not only in support of Roy Moore, but in terms of showing what they see as the shortcomings of the Democratic nominee.
Right.
And he's talked about taking people, going down to Alabama. Now, having on the ground is different and might be more helpful to a small campaign
than
public and saying,
But here's
this
the
is our cause and we're behind him.
They say they might get involved in the primaries to replace Luke Messer and Todd Rokita. If you're one of those candidates and they say, oh, yeah, we're going to phone bank for you, do you say, no thanks?
Yes, say no thanks.
You better.
Say no thanks.
It doesn't depend.
You do not equivocate on this. If the man has racist ties, he hadn't even incorporated or registered his PAC yet, so we don't even know if he's real, right? But I don't care. If you're those candidates, John, you say no thanks.
My point is this. If you're a tiny district...
There wasn't a lot of those tiny districts.
But if somebody says, I want to volunteer...
Dog catcher, you don't say, come on!
I agree with you philosophically.
You say, go away!
Here's the problem. There is not agreement from Caleb Schumacher that he has white nationalist ties. He says, oh, those videos are not really me. They put my name on it, but it wasn't
like
really me.
That's not really Trump's voice on the sexual harassment tape.
Well, that,
yeah,
I mean, does he get to sort of, does that matter whether it was him or if it appears like he has these ties, does it matter? Does anything else matter?
Probably not, actually. And I think more than appears. It's like Donald Trump disavowing that tape, okay? Just because you say it's not true doesn't make it a lie. And the problem I have with this is I understand the Braun campaign kicked him out. Why did he go there in the first place? What is it about Braun's candidacy that energized this white supremacist to get involved? I think that's worrisome. Are they going to repudiate any of the signatures that he brought to the table? Did they come off his Rolodex, for example? And why? Would be my question.
If you're the Mike Braun campaign, you've already you cut ties before any of this came out. You got ahead of the game here. You found out that this guy had ties to this group, and you said, get out. Is that good enough? Are you worried about any continued blowback from this?
No, I'm not, because Mike Braun did the right thing. As soon as they found out, my understanding, as soon as they found out what was going on, this guy was gone. And look, this is the kind of thing where I'm really proud right now of some people in my party that are going forward, that are saying, look, this is completely unacceptable. And we're holding people to the fire, like Councillor Jeff Miller in Indianapolis. I think a lot of Republicans of good conscience have said we absolutely cannot support Roy Moore and people that are doing this.
And then
our friends on the other side of the aisle, you know, let Al Franken and John Conyers.
Nobody's
just like
hanging around.
They've asked
Conyers to step down. So it's not.
Well, it only took the leader
not,
a week.
It is not a one-sided thing. What concerns me about this is why did this guy go to Braun's campaign in the first place? Nobody's given a good explanation of that.
Did you stumble upon him?
Is it just hate for Messer and Rokita?
He said that he was interested in getting involved in the primaries of the people to replace Messer and Rokita, and maybe he just confused Mike Braun with his brother Steve, who's running for the 4th District.
He's dumb as well as supremacist.
Governor Holcomb directed excise police this week to step up, quote-unquote, education of retailers who sell CBD products, as Indiana Attorney General Hill raises questions about their legality.
Holcomb's office says it wants the state excise police to educate retailers over the next couple of months as to what Indiana law does and doesn't say about cannabidiol, or CBD oil, which is derived from cannabis and hemp. That's after Attorney General Curtis Hill issued an advisory opinion that says CBD products are illegal unless used to help treat epileptic diseases, as outlined by 2017 legislation. Yet some claim a 2014 law legalizes CBD oil in small amounts. Legislative leaders have said they'll attempt to clarify state law in the upcoming session.
John Ketzenberger, it was quite a slog to get to the 2017 CBD bill passed. Easy for me to say. Can lawmakers accomplish something similar in a short session?
Well, I think it's going to be as difficult as it was for you to say CBD bill, which is no easy thing to do. What we have now is a proxy. The CBD now is the proxy for this marijuana question that's constantly swirling around the legislature. And by our poll a few weeks ago, seems to show some positive momentum. And I think that the backers of marijuana legalization for various means are seeing the CBD situation as a means to push the issue and also to square those laws from 14 and 17. In their favor to loosen the laws as opposed to what Attorney General Hill is saying.
You mean a gateway to marijuana, John?
Gateway to marijuana laws. And so I think, that's where we're at. To your question specifically, I think that interest in trying to get that done because there is that conflict between 14 and 17 and the ruling by the Attorney General and the actions of the governor, which is kind of in between all of that. So I think that's really a reflection of what's going to happen in the legislature. I think they'll try to get it done.
There is absolutely groups who think the CBD is this sort of the stepping stone to just broadening this bit by bit by bit until you get to medical marijuana or something beyond that. But given that the governor's come out against it, any sort of marijuana legislation, Attorney General Curtis Hill has certainly come out against it, the prosecutors are against it, police are generally against it. If they clarify the law, is it going to actually come down to tighten restrictions on CBD more than it will be to loosen them up at all?
I hadn't thought of it that way, but you raise a good point. Because when you do have law enforcement lining up in such a unified fashion, I think that carries a lot of weight. I mean, there aren't many lawmakers, and we've seen this whether we're talking about some of the drawn-out battles over sentencing reform or how to police various types of narcotics and drugs. It's tough for any lawmaker of any party anywhere in the state to be seen as soft on crime or being opposed to police organizations and prosecutors' organizations. So that does make it tough, even though John's right, lawmakers at the same time don't like to see internal conflict in the measures they've passed.
The opioid crisis is one of the top focuses of every caucus at the State House. Mm-hmm. Certainly it has been and will be this session. Does that complicate things even further? Because while they may not be linked, there are going to be people who it seems to them like they are.
That's right. I mean, everybody's going to use whatever talking point, you know, is going to best fit their position. I've been a little surprised at some of the hate that has been thrown towards the Attorney General as the result of his opinion. I read it. He's not making a policy pronouncement here. He's saying this is how I read the law, and this is what I think it says. And if we don't like that, I mean, that's, you know, he's doing the conservative thing that you do. You say this is what the law is as it reads, not how we want it to be, and is throwing it back to the legislature to fix it, right? And
the conservative
and to see where we end up at the end of the session.
You know, the apparent conflict here between the governor and the attorney general is, I think, one of the more interesting facets of this. And if anybody who equates smoking marijuana with the oil obviously is overindulged. I mean, but we have people that are out there that are really hurting from epilepsy and from other terminal cancers and other problems as a result of having, too much radiation treatment. This is the only relief they get. Okay, never mind the philosophical argument. You have people that are in extreme pain, and we're thumbing our nose at them. And I think that's unacceptable.
I do think the momentum is on that side. I mean, we talked about battle lines and coalitions. You have even the American Legion in Indiana coming out several weeks or months back saying, yeah, maybe not just on the
soil, they want medical marijuana.
They're talking about medical marijuana
as
an alternative, perhaps to the opioid crisis, which has claimed an alarming number of its members in recent months.
But bills will have 4 weeks to get out of the first house in this session.
That's why I say it's the momentum.
It's a long-term
every
momentum.
Every question I'm answering today, it's about timing.
Some more guns,
the timing, I don't think, is right.
Kindergartners or some other really important.
The timing isn't right
like
in
that.
This session, but the momentum is on the side of change for the next, let's say, within the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years.
Yeah. I mean, ridiculous. They could get it done if they wanted to.
Well, speaking of education, State Superintendent Jennifer McCormick rolled out her legislative agenda this week, which includes lowering the minimum compulsory school age. McCormick's 2018 priorities for the General Assembly will include a push to lower the mandatory age to attend school from 7 to 5. McCormick says lowering the age could help at-risk youth. She'll also push to relax licensing requirements from teachers who want to instruct in another subject area. For instance, if a teacher is licensed for science but also wants to teach algebra, McCormick wants to reduce hurdles to make that process easier.
And
Eleni McCormick isn't the first to advance lowering the mandatory school age. Certainly not the first Republican. Certainly not Democrats have done it too. But is there any chance she'll find success where those happen?
I would hope so. I mean, now that it's a Republican idea and they have Republican majorities, it is an idea whose time has come. It's long past come. At 5 years of age, children are ready to learn. And in fact, they're like sponges absorbing information. And we ought to be able to provide that as a state and get, when we talk about wanting to have great economic development, well, our income here continues to sink. And it continues to sink because we're not educating, not to a particular type of job that's out there, but we're not educating the whole person. We ought to be starting at age 5, maybe even younger than that, to catch those kids in time and instill with them the desire to have the kind of education that'll transition them from one job to another as the economy changes.
Snarkiness aside, Anne's point.
What snarkiness?
What would we
was
have
there?
To talk
Anne,
about?
Snarkiness aside, Anne's point. A lot of times you see this. Whoever the party is in power, one idea that had been advanced by the other party, as soon as somebody in the party in power says it, it certainly gives it more credence.
It does.
Is this going to be the thing that pushes it over the edge?
I don't think so. Could be wrong. But this is a demonstration of a point that Anne, I think, was incorrect on earlier when she said that Republicans are always in lockstep together. This is an issue where I don't think that's going to be the case.
Well,
I think that you're going to have...
She's not really a Republican.
Okay.
She's a closet Democrat.
So you've got Republicans leading the education committees. You've got a lot of influential outside groups in the education space. I don't think this is going to be as simple as a Republican has advanced it. Now the Republicans will pass it, and the Republican governor will sign it.
If that theory were correct, we would have
that. I don't think that's how it'll go.
If that theory always held, we would have marijuana reform because it's a Republican now backing the legalization of marijuana. So,
do you see this finally being the trick that sends it over the edge? Or
I don't think so. No. I think, again, the short session. And it's just not there yet.
Finally, we end on a sad note this week as actor Jim Nabors passed away. Nabors was an Indianapolis Motor Speedway legend, singing Back Home Again in Indiana before each running of the 500 for more than 30 years. Now, Joey Fox, they play video of Harry Carey singing the seventh inning stretch at many Cubs games. Should they just play video of Jim Nabors at the 500 every year?
I think they need to acknowledge him, but I think you keep the tradition alive. I think you need other Hoosiers, you need people singing the song.
What? How would you honor Jim Nabors at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway?
I think it's fine to acknowledge him, but you know, he's passed, and that's sad. But Andre Lacy passed this week,
yes,
and
he
had
did.
More of a profound impact on Central Indiana.
That's true. Well, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Joey Fox, John Schwanes of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Katzenberger. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFII.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Back home again. It seems that I can see the gleaming candlelight still burning bright through the sycamore.